with a prayer. And Eric, would you lead us in that prayer?
Our gracious Heavenly Father, we thank you for the many blessings which you've given us today, and thank you for life and blessings of your Son. Father, we pray that you be with every one of us as we learn and study and fellowship with each other. Father, I pray that you be with Richard in the words and the presentation he has, and help us to learn and grow, and that things he says can shape and mold us and change our lives. We ask that we can become Christians who are worthy to bear your name. That's all these things in your Son's name.
Amen. Amen. Well, I'm here to talk and discuss with you the next 45 minutes or so concerning some of the new opportunities in Africa. I have given out to you a sheet, and if somebody hasn't gotten one, I'll get you one, that goes over the opportunities as far as areas to go and to work, and I'll talk most of the time about those, but I want to mention some other things right up front. One of the newer opportunities that we have in Africa is to be able to have internships. And we have some students from ACU who are here with us today in this class who are planning to go on internships in Africa. I make a distinction between campaigns and internships in that internships are primarily educational in nature, so that at the end of the experience, those who have gone can say, I want to do this long-term as a career, or I want to keep involved in African missions in some way from here on, or this really isn't for me. They're longer experiences, 6 to 7 weeks, sometimes 8 weeks, located in one area with a mission family. And we try not to have more than 6 students go to any one place. We'd like to see 2 or 4 go. Never like to see one go by themselves, but small groups. Campaigns are good experiences, but when they go on campaigns, they're exposed to a lot of a new part of the world, but they're not able to interact as much with the nationals and with missionary families because it's such a large group. And so certain ones are able to and not others. And so we have an opportunity now in Africa to have internships because we have some experienced teams there who want people to come in and to, they can be a part of their education process. They go there and they help serve, but they also learn some language, something about the culture, what it's like to plant churches in that part of the area. What's the missionary family life like? How do they live? How do they manage a family there on the field? A lot of those things are missed in a shorter experience. They also get to view firsthand what the dynamics of a team is like on the field. They may hear a lot about team missions, but in shorter term kind of visits, they never get to see how the team works. And so in this longer term internship, they're able to do that. And that's a new opportunity because we now have a lot of missionary teams on the continent who want people to come for internships. And they kind of track the students who've come to see how many of them make it back to the field, part of other teams later on. Another new opportunity now is to work with nationals on the field. Now, we've always worked with the people of Africa as we've gone to Africa. I'm saying now there's such a mature leadership in some countries that campaigns, internships, training programs, and people who want to go and spend 2 and 3 years in the mission field can go and work under mature African leadership and never spend a whole lot of time with experienced missionaries who are there. There's defined leadership in many countries. This is particularly in the country of Ghana. That's true also in Nigeria. Ethiopia is a place we have not explored very much in the recent history, although they have the third largest number of members of the Churches of Christ on the continent, or in Ethiopia, 45,000. And very mature leadership there, but I see roles for people to go in, spend 2 or 3 years what the Baptists would call seconded to the national church. Be there for the national church, tell them what they would like them to do. Most of our missions to Africa have gone in with our own agendas. This is what we want to do as missionaries. And there's still plenty of room for that. And that's what I'll spend most of my time talking about today. But there are places in Africa now where we can go and work under national leadership and have them direct what needs to be done and tell us how they can use us. We are beginning now to have more linkage around the globe. I'll talk a little bit more about that at the mission luncheon if you come to that at noon. And there'll be classes tomorrow that Tom Dolan and I will be conducting on Wednesday, three different sessions about that. But even in Africa today, we have people who have electronic mail, who are talking to their supporting congregations back here very reasonably. They're talking to other missionaries on the field, and that's going to continue to happen. There is also now cooperation that's taking place among missionaries on the continent. A lot of what's been done in the past in Africa is one mission team, one mission family over here, another team another place, each doing their own things, and now there is beginning to be more networking between these mission teams to do joint projects, to do joint research, to get the nationals from these different areas to meet together. And one of the most exciting things that I think that is new, a new opportunity not for us, except to pray about it, because this belongs to the nationals of Africa, is Africans who are reaching Africa together. They've had one meeting that took place in Nairobi 2 years ago. Another one should take place this year in Nigeria, where the African brethren themselves from all over the continent, there were about 200 of them in Nairobi, from I think 20-something different countries, met together, planning how do we reach the rest of Africa. And that's something, even though we still need mission teams, that needs to be not missionary-directed, but let the nationals plan their own agendas for their continent. That's a very exciting thing for me, that the leadership has gotten to that point, that they're thinking continentally on what needs to be done. That's not only happening in Africa, but we are in an African situation here. In the mission luncheon, I'll talk a little bit more about how that's happening in other areas. Any questions you might have about those four things that I just mentioned very hurriedly there? New things, the internships, and working with nationals, the linking, and then the cooperation. Then I'd like to move on then to the target areas. This is not to be competitive with any other continent in the world, but indeed I think as I've been in many places in Africa, part of a work for 16 years in Africa, and as I look at this, at what's been happening, the response that's been happening, there is no other place in the world, in our generation anyway, where there's been such a response to the gospel, but on Africa. Fully two-thirds of the members of the Churches of Christ outside the United States, 430,000 of them are on the continent of Africa. But there are still a lot of other, however you want to term it, open areas, open doors. They're maybe not all that newly opened. They've been open for a long time, but great opportunities for planting congregations. So I'd like to talk to you about five ethnic groups and four cities on the continent today and a bit about them. I've visited each one of these. Research teams have visited there with me as well. There are two here in this class who will be with me this summer on a research trip, Eric Guild and James Scudder, and they'll get to see some new areas, and we'll try and look at those areas and see if they should become priorities. Not every place that we visit becomes a priority. In fact, we have decided that several of the places that we visited just aren't open yet. They're not ripe. But these that I want to talk about are the ones that we've brought out of many visits and a lot of research that we feel are places that need to be targeted for the near future anyway. So the first one is the Mosi, that third slide that you see down there. They're in the country of Burkina Faso. That may not be familiar to some of you. It used to be called Upper Volta. Now called Burkina Faso. The capital city we'll talk about in a few minutes is Ouagadougou. I love that. I would have loved to have lived in a city of Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso. It sounds so African to me. It's hard to count how large African ethnic groups are. The figures that I've seen for the Mosi range anywhere from 4 to 6 million. So I've taken the center figure there. 5 million people, the largest ethnic group by far in this Sahelian country. It's the furthest southern extension of the Sahara Desert. It's a very dry area. Those who would decide to go and work among the Mosi people will know right up front that they're not going into the 7,000-foot highlands of the Rift Valley in Kenya where everything is green. It's dry. It is hot. But there are more than 5 million people who live there who need the gospel. And it may be that those families who decide to go and work among the Mosi people will build their own houses, use solar electric power, which is now cheaper than it's ever been before, and to make some accommodations out in these very rural areas where they can live and serve. Most of the groups that I'm going to talk about today are not do not have large populations of Islamic peoples, but the Mosi do. They're at least 35% Islamic. It's a different kind of Islam than what you may be accustomed to seeing on the TV or maybe having visited the Middle East or the north of Africa. They're what we call a mission syncretistic. There's a blend of their local traditions and Islam. Found many Mosi Muslims who were wearing charms, fetishes from the traditional culture, but they still went to the mosque at the appointed hours for prayer. So they are Islamic peoples, but there is a mixture with their traditional religion. As I said, they're the largest ethnic group in Burkina Faso, although close to 750,000 of them live outside the country. Because of it being so arid, many people who were born and raised in Burkina Faso have gone into neighboring Guinea and particularly Ivory Coast, a much more wealthier nation, to work. There are large pockets of this ethnic group where there are no congregations of any kind that would call themselves Christian. Just outside the city of Ouagadougou, the capital, which sits in the center of the Mosi ethnic group, to the east, the western side, there are quite a number of Baptist and SIM, Sudan Interior Mission congregations there. But to the east, there's basically nothing going on at all. And that's where about 3 million of these Mosi people live today. And nothing going on that side. And a great opportunity. Seeming to me to be very open to the gospel. The Baptists and the SIM have found great response on the western side. And so I think there is a great opportunity there in that country. Again, the challenge is going to be the living conditions among the Mosi. I want to just talk briefly about this one. I have a particular interest now, as of about 2 weeks ago, in the Aja people, and I'll just kind of go over this. There's an opportunity for people to join our team. My wife and I are part of a team that have just decided to target the Aja people. They're in the country of Benin. Little small country, again, that's changed its name. Not all countries in Africa have, but this, again, Benin has. They used to be called Dahomey, and you may know that name. It may be more familiar to you, Dahomey. They is Benin. Aja straddled the border between Benin and Togo, another small country to the west of Benin. But about 400,000 of the Aja live in Benin, another 150,000 in Togo. The border is very easy to cross. Americans do not need visas to cross into Togo. There are no visa regulations at all, so we'll easily be able to go into both sides. They're at least 93% non-Christian. The Aja people are very similar to the Fon ethnic group where we have a team already. It's been there now almost at 2 years. The Aja people, at almost in front of every home, you'll find a shrine about this big, and it's usually just the form of a mud kind of cone. Sometimes they'll carve out some eyes and a mouth or put some cowrie shells to look like a mouth. But on it you will find freshly spilled milk or intestines of chickens where sacrifices are made basically every day to the ancestral spirits and to the gods. They as well have other shrines that are just pieces of metal. They may be a hoe, it may be a knife, sticking up out of the ground, and they have a god of iron. There are many smiths, not by name, but by trade, among the Aja, as well as the Fon, and in both these countries of Togo and Benin. So they have an iron god that they also worship, and a thunder god, and he has a special type of shrine to them. Very traditional people. They are adjacent to two places where we already have teams that are very new. This is a brand new thrust into French-speaking West Africa. No teams have really been there before. There have been individuals who have gone, and there's some good works that have been done, particularly in Ivory Coast. But this is a new thrust here. Just right at 2 years, the team that are working among the Fon, then in neighboring Togo, the Wachi team from Harding has not been there a year yet, and now we have just chosen to work among the Aja that lie between them. It's a great opportunity, and we're excited about what the Lord will be doing in French-speaking in West Africa. Next one has to do with an ethnic group from the Ivory Coast, Côte d'Ivoire. They like to be called by their French name. And Ivory Coast, as far as West Africa is concerned, French-speaking West Africa, is the pearl of West Africa. It is a wealthy nation compared to most of the others. The French put most of their time and energy educationally, industrially into that nation. I'll talk about the capital city here in a few minutes, but I want to talk now about this one ethnic group, the Gede people. The Gede people are known as the people of the mask. Unlike other African ethnic groups, many of them have different clans that people are born into. Or they'll have different age sets in which people, at they become the age of adolescence, they are circumcised or go through some other rite of passage. They become members of that age set. Well, among the Gede people, their particular groups that they divide into are different sets of masks. And you're initiated into a specific masked secret society. And these masked societies have kept a real hold on the Gede people for many, many years. To such an extent, as you go and visit among the Gede people, the different Christian groups that are there, most of them are now completely nationalized, not attached to the old missions, be it the Baptist or the Reformed Church. They will tell you that our people don't seem to be very open to the gospel. The fetish priests, the heads of the masked societies, have too much of a grip on our people. But they've been saying that for the last 15 or 20 years. And I think they've come more to believe it than maybe what the reality is of the situation. When we were there this last summer, we found a lot of people who were willing to talk to us. And the country of Ivory Coast needs to have a lot more missionaries going there because of its strategic position. And I would think the Gede would be the first place to go in, 90% at least non-Christian. As I said, there's a lot more work that needs to be done in Ivory Coast. Also among these Gede people, we saw figures as, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, but close to 800,000 Liberian refugees living among them. A large number of them along the borders. Now, some of them would be to the north, among the Dan-speaking people, but these Liberians who live among the Gede are of the same ethnic group. They speak the same language. They call them a different name in Liberia, but they're the same people, ethnically and linguistically. And missionaries cannot really be in Liberia right now. And so part of working among the Gede would also be some outreach into Liberia in the future. And these Liberians are extremely receptive. The Assemblies of God have just moved in there, and they're just planting churches up and down the border on the Ivory Coast side among these Gede people who are Liberians homeland. Well, next are the Makua people of Mozambique. I've talked about the Makua people now going on 5 years. I really have a special place in my heart for these people. They live in this country that has been so troubled for so long, of Mozambique. More than 20 years of war, first a war for independence and then a civil war. But the war has come to a halt. They've had about 18 months now of peace. We just recently had an election. The man who was president won the election. He's still in office. Seemingly, the opposition party is going to abide by what took place. They have begun to remove what they say are 200,000 landmines in the country. There are a lot of people from Pakistan who've been trained in this, have gone in to remove these things. People are now moving back to their home villages where they all, for years, have been around the cities where they get protection and where the International Red Cross would come and bring food. They've been away from their homelands and farming for years, and now they're beginning to go back out and to reclaim their homelands. The Makua people is the largest ethnic group in the country, but they're in the far north that have been inaccessible to any Christian message for a long time, except for churches that were planted before the wars began to break out. And there have been some very faithful people there preaching during that time. Mozambique just needs an awful lot of work, and it's one of those places where I hope cooperation will come from Brazilian Christians. We have a large number of Christians in Brazil. They speak Portuguese, which is the national language of Mozambique. I really like to challenge some of our Portuguese brethren to begin to target them.
I understand that we have numerous Christians in Balantri, Malawi.
That's right.
Deal across the border with a lot of people.
That's right.
A lot of people.
And some of the people who are leaders in churches in northern Mozambique have had some training there at the school. Also, there is some outreach by nationals coming from Mutare in Zimbabwe, from the preacher's training school there. And so nationals are beginning to reach in. It's a vast country. But yeah, they've had...
We're doing a lot of sport in Malawi.
Uh-huh, so that's why you knew. Okay.
But what we do is in northern Malawi.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. There's a lot that's beginning to come across the borders into these countries.
We're supporting 1580 preachers in northern Malawi.
Who are working within Malawi itself?
Yes.
Okay, all right, great. Well, I think these Makua people are a real target for the future. The place on planet Earth today where the Churches of Christ are growing more rapidly than any other place is among the Sukuma people in Tanzania. Right up against Lake Victoria, every new report we get from the missionaries who work there talk about new churches being planted. It's just an exciting work. I think the last count I saw was 23 congregations. The missionaries have been there under 4 years. It's just spreading like wildfire. I've been a part of the work myself that saw congregations grow rapidly, but not that rapidly. Within 10 years, we're going to see well over 100 congregations in that area. Very, very large ethnic group. Again, this is one of these ones that's hard to count. I've heard figures of over 5 million people there, but I wrote down 4 million here. There are just two families working there right now among them. They live in the city of Mwanza, and they travel out to work among the Sukuma people. This is the largest ethnic group, again, in the country of Tanzania that has had mission work going on there for many, many years, but for some reason, up in this far western, northwestern region, the largest ethnic group in the country has been neglected. And they just seem to be very open to the gospel.
We built a building in the Dar es Salaam area back in the 60s.
In the 60s, with the Dennises. Were they?
Yeah. The preachers that were there down in Malawi now.
Okay. All right. Did they come from Malawi originally? There were a lot of Malawian preachers who went to Tanzania, were the very first missionaries to go into Tanzania in the 60s.
There's two of them that are district leaders in two of the northern Malawi districts.
Uh-huh. Okay.
They're sort of over the other local preachers.
Because they've been around for a long time, the experience, they train them, they're mentors, huh? There's still a need for more workers to work among these Sukuma people, and I pray that more will take on the challenge. There are two families here at ACU who hope to join these, but they're still 2 years away. But an ethnic group this big and so open to the gospel really needs an army of people to go into work.
Now, question, is that farther west than the Chilala mission?
Yes, it is. Farther west and north.
I see.
Right up against the lake, okay, and then spreading south, southeastern from there. Mm-hmm. We'll talk then about some urban areas as well. I worked in Africa for 2.5 years in the capital city of Kenya, Nairobi. My wife and I worked. Then we moved out in the rural area, and I feel myself gifted by the Lord, and we do as a family to work in rural areas. But there are some great needs in the urban centers of Africa. Africa is following the trend of the rest of the world, becoming more and more urban. But Africa will not be predominantly urban for many, many years. What I see figures like at 2020, it may be 70% rural, 30% urban. I see projections way off in the future that may be talking about 50% urban, but that's way, way off. But still, the urban centers are growing very rapidly. Figures right across Africa are approaching 7% growth rate per year. That is just a fantastic growth rate. When we went to Kenya in 1972 to work in Nairobi, there were about 700,000 people in Nairobi. Today, I hear it's approaching 3 million. What happens to a city that grows that rapidly? We're talking about African population as a whole, country by country, growing at a rate about a little bit over 4% per year. And that's fantastic growth rate per annum. But you talk about in the urban centers, it's approaching 7%. And so there are some real challenges there. So I want to talk first off. I know of him and have written some letters to him at some time. Okay. Yeah, in the capital there, in that city. The Dennises are there now working with him. For a while they worked together. Ouagadougou is the capital of Burkina Faso. I should have done it. I asked people to pronounce that name right there. Once you hear it, it's pretty simple. Huh? It doesn't look like that. But anyway, it's Ouagadougou. They call it Ouaga.
I didn't get the country again.
Burkina Faso. Used to be called Upper Volta.
Yeah.
Okay? That's right. That's where I cover an ethnic group there. Now, this is the capital city. Okay? It's 700,000 people, and this is the not only the capital of the country, but it's the seat for the Mossi ethnic group. In the middle of the city, there is a place where the leader of the Mossi ethnic group lives, the Maranava. And it is, you could call it the state house, but that would give you the wrong impression. It covers what I would guess to be about 4 square city blocks. It has walls that stand about 15 feet tall, and they're mud. And inside it, there are a lot of mud houses where he and his very, very large family live. And at the main gate, there is a changing of the guard. Used to be on, I think, 4 times a day. When I was there this summer, I didn't even notice the guard, so I don't even know if that is still taking place. But there we have, in a very modern capital city of Africa today, the leader of the largest ethnic group still has his palace. There is a president of the country, there are elected public officials, but this Maranava still holds an awful lot of clout in the country for how decisions are going to be made. This particular city has a large number of Islamic people. About 40 to 45% of Ouagadougou is Islamic. In my experience in West Africa, Islam somehow has worked better in the urban centers than it has in the rural areas. You'll find a larger percentage of the people in the urban centers who are Islamic. And so you have that large segment there. There are a great number of missions headquarters for the various denominations and mission agencies there in the capital city, Ouagadougou. But very few of them doing work in the city. They're all going out. Here we have a great mixture then again of this traditional religion, symbolized by the Maranava, and these Islamic peoples, and then many of them who still follow African traditional religion from the other ethnic groups that come to live there. It is the most strategic city for this whole Sahelian region. And when I say the Sahel, I think of Burkina Faso, the country of Mali, and Niger to the north, and Chad. This is the most important city in that region, Ouagadougou, both educationally and industrially. Believe it or not, for Africa, Ouagadougou is the film capital of the continent. They have a film festival there that's much like the Cannes Film Festival for European and American films. And a lot of films have been produced there. We were in the country of Burkina Faso this past summer. They were showing a triple feature, an early showing at 6 o'clock of an American film, and that's what we went to see. We were going to go see both. Then there was a Burkina Faso-made film in the Moray language, in the Mossi language. And I guess it was about half full for the American film. An action one, which usually Africans, they just love the action films. When they opened the door, let people come in for the next feature, it was unbelievable theater. It was open air, but it was a projection. It had walls around it, projection. We just see the sky and watch the film. They could not get everybody in. And there was a second showing when we walked out after watching that film that was made in Burkina Faso, 2-hour full-length feature film. We walked out, and there were hundreds of people waiting to get in for the next one. They love films in Ouagadougou, particularly their own. So it is a cultural center as well for that Sahel region. didn't put the title up there above it, but this is the capital city of Ivory Coast, Abidjan. When I mentioned the Gere people, I said a little bit about how modern Ivory Coast is. Ouagadougou just has tall, high-rise buildings, a lot of evidence of French architecture, a very colorful town, reggae music and Caribbean music blaring out of the cafes and the taxis all over the town, very too. On the lagoons, there are people who water ski on them. It's just a town of great contrast. Very little work by anybody has been done in the city of Ouagadougou. As we would talk to people in the city, what kind of work needs to be done in Ivory Coast? And they would say, we need more workers to target, particularly the Islamic peoples who live in Abidjan, the capital city. It is a center where people come for schooling, for trade, or just to come to get a job from all of the countries of French-speaking West Africa. You can find large segments of each of them. Talked a minute ago about the Mossi people. There are 4 million people. Their capital city is Ouagadougou that I just talked about. But people told us in Ouagadougou, the largest population of Mossi people living in any one city in the world are the 400,000 of them that live in Abidjan, Ivory Coast, because of the employment opportunities that are there. So it's a place to have outreach to a lot of French-speaking West Africa, and a very, very important town, and we need to have a very good presence there. There are churches there now. They're primarily made up of Ghanaians, English speakers that the missionaries worked among there, and not a whole lot of other work going on. There are some Ivorians are there, very, very good people as well, but there's not been a lot of concentration among the Ivorian population who live in Abidjan. Next city I want to talk about is Lomé, Togo. Lomé is a very African town. It doesn't have the large skyscrapers. There may be two hotels and one office building that go several stories high. But it's basically a single-story city right on the coast of this, what is becoming more and more a convention city for people from Europe and from West Africa. Because most Europeans and Americans do not need visas, and they have some large convention facilities there, it's a place that's easy to cater to conventions. They've had some political problems in recent years that have kind of deterred some of that thrust, but things are peaceful there now. About 700,000 people. This city sits right on the coast and right on the border with Ghana. Just right on the very edge of the northern part of town is the border post to go into the country of Ghana. They have, within the city of Lome, schools that teach African traditional religion. Not as a subject, that's the whole intent. There are schools for fetish priests. They teach people to divine. Very openly, the government accepts that. It's one of the few places I've been in Africa where the government doesn't just let it happen, they endorse it and they encourage it. And so part of what you would face in Lomé, Togo, would be opposition of large training schools and wrong use of the word, but an evangelistic thrust by these traditional practitioners right there in the city as well. There is already some good leadership in the church in the city of Lomé, and any missionaries who go there to work would need to make sure that they go in and work as partners or under the national leadership that's there. There are some people who have been very faithful for many, many years serving in that country, but there's just a need for some more help in reaching out in that city. Said here, new works are beginning in other places of the country, and we need a good presence in the capital if works are going to continue in other parts. Last one I want to talk about is the capital city of the country of Benin, Cotonou. 1 million people. It's a very crowded city. It's grown very fast. When I first went into Benin in 1989, we walked across the border from Togo, and there was a big arch, and it said in French, I'll say the English, there's patriotism or death. And there was a big picture of Lenin on one side and one of Stalin on the other. And it was a Marxist country at that time. And as we went into this capital city of Cotonou, there were troops everywhere, very heavily armed, flak jackets on, automatic weapons in their hands. There was a lot of fear in the city, and it didn't look very populated to me. The country of Benin was the first country to have a democratic election in this new wave of democratization in Africa. It was not until 1992, when they had their election, that ever an African president was stood for an election and lost. Very first one, 1992, Kariakou, the president. There have been several since then, Kaunda, Banda, and others who have been voted out of office. But usually they decide either not to move when they got voted out, like Ayadema in neighboring Togo, who's still there, or they decide not to run and just get out of politics. Been a very stable transition now into democracy, and the city is just booming with people. Something I forgot to mention about Ouagadougou when I was talking about there, I call it the moped capital of the world. There are just those little mopeds everywhere. Well, I was surprised this last summer when in Benin, how many more are there now? In the capital city of Cotonou, there are just thousands of these little motorbikes every place you go. Again, being the capital city, there are many mission agencies and denominational groups who have their headquarters there, but not much going on in the city. They're going out and doing work. There is one small congregation in that city. There's a Ghanaian evangelist working among them, George Akpable, doing a very, very fine job. But he has visions for planting churches in other places in the country as well. And there's still a great need for planting churches there in that city of Cotonou. Well, that's a very rapid run through what I think are probably the best opportunities right now on the continent of Africa for new works. Now, there's a lot to be said about strengthening some of the works that are already there, adding to some existing teams, but these I see as those that are new, that are needing some help. What kind of questions might you have about what I presented or anything else about Africa? We have others here who know. Sonny Guild, also a missionary in residence here, was missionary in Africa for 10 years and as well helps here in advising and mentoring and recruiting for Africa. And Roy Ramsey, who worked in Kisumu as well, is here with us and has not only been a missionary there, but now has been part of motivating a congregation to support missionaries back to Africa. And we can help if there are some questions. any at all. Some of you who are here as visitors, tell us maybe some of your interests and your involvement in Africa. Heard about y'all's from Malawi, maybe you could share some more about that, but what about some of the rest of you?
I'm here mainly just to learn more about opportunities and the potential of what's going on in Africa. And I appreciate so much you sharing this information and the insights. Tremendous for you.
Thank you. We have students here in the room who will be going this summer, many of them for the first time to Africa. And to them, a lot of what I said today, they've heard before. And I'm sure they're getting to the point where dissonance is really building. I've heard enough about Africa. I want to see it. And they're right on the verge of going to do that now. It's going to be, and I would encourage you as well.
Have you been in the country of Namibia? It used to be called Southwest Africa.
No, I haven't. Yeah, it's a very big country, but not very populated. Less than 1 million people in the whole country.
We have one man who's been there 5 years. There's another man who was there several years prior to that. Since it was originally a German colony, it's very, very, very difficult to evangelize the white people there.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
In fact, they've really done more good with the native black people.
Who've come from South Africa, most of them, yeah. Who've gone up there, that's right.
But see, it's an independent nation.
Sure it is. Oh, sure. But there have been national evangelists who've gone up there. Yeah, there are some churches in the capital, Windhoek, but not much done in a lot of other places. It is still a big opportunity. It's a big old country.
The church is in the preacher's home.
Is that,
I've been there 3 times in
okay.
the last 5 years.
Okay.
Ernie, you might tell them about Bess's work and what she does with the mission.
Well, congregation. My wife has been very big in our congregation with Word Bible School, and particularly in Nigeria, Ghana, and then we tried to concentrate on Malawian work. In fact, today, some of our preachers that, you know, are under our support are doing most of the grading on a local basis. We don't have the international mail time element involved anymore. And then in addition to that, she gathers up used clothing, but people bring her more clothing than we have money to send to Malawi. We just do a lot of really good work with sending a lot of clothing over there, even though it's roughly, the postage is pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Over $2 a pound.
Sure, yeah.
But that's, you know, that's cheap clothing.
Yeah, it is.
And I help her with some of the mailing work.
Great. Lord, as already, I was going to say, Lord should bless you for that. Lord is blessing you, I'm sure, already for that.
Her brother, this goes way back, John Harden,
uh-huh.
was in South Africa for 30 years, starting at 49.
Uh-huh.
So we've made numerous trips over there. In fact, I'm on my next to the last trip to Southern Africa. I've made 8, and this is my next to the last trip.
Okay. This is Betsy Chenault's husband, first
right.
husband. That's right. Yeah, she just lives over here. Yeah.
I'm going there for lunch.
Okay, yeah. How is she doing these days? Last time I saw her, still she was ailing quite bad.
We were over Thursday, Friday, and Saturday morning, and you know, she seemed a bit better than the last time we were there.
Uh-huh.
But she's a semi-invalid and will be the rest of her
yeah.
life.
But she's written several books from her bed. About African missions.
First hand.
Yeah, that's right.
Lovely lady.
Yeah.
Donna Horn from the Benoni area, by the way, has written an interesting book, too.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Well, thank you very much. I think we've reached the end of this time, and I'd encourage you to be in the luncheon this afternoon.
Enjoy your day.